You know, we've got to reestablish confidence in the voters that we're going to have one legal ballot cast and one legal ballot counted. And I think a lot of that all across the country was removed. And if ever we lose the confidence of the voters that their vote is going to matter, then of course that has impact on elections across the board.
What we're really trying to do is, number one, answer the left in every court battle that they bring to try to undermine good laws to protect the integrity of our elections. And two, take election administrators to court when they decide that they're going to take matters into their own hands and not follow the rules that and laws that are put in place by the state legislatures, which are really the entities that are supposed to be regulating our elections.
All right, folks, it is Tuesday. Just a quick reminder off the top. Do me a favor, hit that subscribe button, because guess what? We always have amazing shows. Tomorrow, Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville's here. Laura Trump, co-chair of the RNC, will be here Friday. Great panel on Thursday. And if you hit the notification button, you never have to worry. It gives you a little heads up. So subscribe to the show and you'll always be in the know. That's the best part. Go to YouTube. Plus, it helps us. That's the other thing. Let's just be honest with you. It helps us. Trump this morning was fined $9,000 for violating his gag order 9 times. $1,000 a whack. I would take that seriously, but I'm not a billionaire, so I don't know that that really matters to him. And there's some question now about maybe he actually can attend Barron's graduation, which the judge is being kind of a jerk about. So a lot of issues going on today. Michael Cohen, his former fixer slash jerk all around, is testifying today. Anyway, so that's all happening. Plus, these protests in Columbia and other universities are ongoing. I mean, these guys just need to get a spine. First, you should fire these presidents. The idea that they're having discussions, you go in and take over the president's office or barricade yourself in front of a dorm, that's trespassing. That's illegal. Arrest them, expel them, and then fire the presidents that don't have the backbone and spine to deal with this and put in place somebody who do. This is college. And by the way, remember, Joe Biden is getting rid of all of their debt. So not only are they not learning anything, then we're helping and we're aiding it and we're carrying the debt. No way, Jose, no more. This is ridiculous what's happening. This is what we're teaching these kids and the faculty members going along with them. If you're sending your kids to one of these institutions, I don't know how you're footing 80 grand a year for them to learn this. Unbelievable. Anyway, by the way, I forgot to talk about this yesterday. Trump and DeSantis met over the weekend. This is just a little bit of a detente to help raise money. But just keep in mind, new things are happening. Positive things are happening on that front. So as I mentioned, a lot to get to on election integrity. Congressman Jody Heiss ran for Secretary of State in Georgia. He lost, but he's got a brand new book out where he explains what's going on in Georgia and what the Democrats' real motives are. We're going to join by him. Plus, Derek Lyons, I used to work with him in the White House. He was the staff secretary. And then he started a group called Restoring Integrity and Trust in Elections Right. And they are having huge successes, especially in the battleground states, stopping the Democrats on doing this. So I'm going to get into it with Derek and Jody after the break. Before that, I want to hear from two of our amazing sponsors that help keep the show free across all the platforms. If you're an animal lover, then you know about my friend Leo Grillo. I've been talking about him for several months on the show. Leo Grillo founded Delta Rescue. And if you go to deltarescue.org, you can see the amazing work that Leo has done with Delta Rescue. He has created a no-kill sanctuary for life for these animals. Now, you didn't notice I didn't say shelter because it's a sanctuary. It's where they can live forever. They get veterinarian care. They get nutrition. They can roam free. It's fantastic. But Delta Rescue completely relies on our contribution. So if you can make any kind of contribution, $50, $100, $1,000, it helps Leo keep the mission of Delta Rescue going. But even more so, if you are an animal lover, if you've rescued a dog or a cat or a horse or anyone else, and you realize how important something like this is, the work of Delta Rescue needs to go on. So yes, look at the videos on deltarescue.org. But if you can, go to the estate planning package and see if you can make Delta Rescue part of your estate to make sure that Delta Rescue is an enduring mission that carries on for years and years to come. Thank you. Losing power is no fun, but unfortunately, so many of us have experienced that. Sometimes it's a natural disaster. Sometimes it's a pole that got hit down. And even more nowadays, they're warning about attacks on our electrical grid. So if you are out of power for an hour, maybe a day, a week, maybe a month or more, would you be ready? Now, I know I am. I have a Patriot Power Generator 2000X that I have in my house. And if you look at the video, it's literally in my house. I have it in my kitchen. I'm running an air fryer, a computer, all of these things, my phone, but you could run even your full refrigerator on the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. It's portable, so you could bring it anywhere. If a family member or a friend was in trouble, you could bring it to them. It can go in your house, as I'm showing you right there. There's no gas. There's no fumes. It runs off solar panels that come free with it. It's powered by the sun. How great is that? No fumes in your house. No noise in your house. No cords getting streamed out. The Patriot Power Generator 2000X is exactly what you need when the power goes out. Now, we know we don't want that to happen, but the odds are that it's going to happen, and you need to be ready like I am. Get the Patriot Power Generator 2000X right now by going to 4patriots.com/Spicer. 4patriots.com/Spicer, and be ready when an emergency comes your way. Gentlemen, good to see you both. Congressman, congrats on the book. I've got my copy here. It's available, obviously, anywhere people can buy books. We've put the link up in the show for people who want it. Nice mix of your experience in politics and the issues. But Derek, I want to start with you and what you guys are doing at Wright. And it's funny because I was thinking about this. Every politician sort of has to answer that question. Are you better off, you know, 4 years, 2 years off? So I'll start it with you in the sort of voting equivalent of that. Are we better off 4 years after the 2020 election than we were then?
Yeah, thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me. It's good to see you. I think we are, in fact, much better off today and going into 2024 than we were, going into and coming out of 2020 for a couple of reasons. But perhaps the biggest one is the vigilance. People are watching right now very closely, this space. And I don't think that was necessarily as true in 2020. When people were sort of caught off guard with all the changes that were put in place with COVID. So there's organizations like ours that started up a couple of years ago, Restoring Integrity and Trust in Elections. There's a whole bunch of other people active in the space. And what we're really trying to do is, number one, answer the left in every court battle that they bring to try to undermine good laws to protect the integrity of our elections. And two, take election administrators to court when they decide that they're going to take matters into their own hands and not follow the rules that and laws that were put in place by the state legislatures, which are really the entities that are supposed to be regulating our elections, state by state, in the 50 states across the country. So I think we are better off. There's still a lot of work to do. It's not a perfect system, but we are moving it with every day towards a better system. And again, just the fact that they know that we're watching and working, I think is part of it.
You know, to that question, Congressman, I was reading your book and there was something that was really interesting to me. And this is on page 69. It says, and this is in reference to COVID. It said the Democrats, in what seemed like an eerie foreknowledge of the pandemic's future impact, were forcefully and effectively moving their agenda for election reform while the Republicans in the rest of the country were simply trying to wrap their heads around the early stages of a pandemic. You quote Rahm Emanuel in the book a couple times talking about don't let a serious crisis go to waste. And what Rahm meant by that was, hey, when you get dealt lemons, figure out how you can make lemonade. Find some way to get your agenda moving forward through a crisis. When you wrote that, did you mean that the Democrats had a plan to address some of the agenda items they had with respect to voting and they just used this, or was it just the perfect confluence of circumstances?
Yeah, I don't know which it is, to be very honest with you, Sean. I can just tell you what I felt during that time. We literally had our very first case of COVID in Washington State, very first case. And the next week, we started having hearings in the Oversight Committee about the need to federalize elections because COVID is coming and people are going to be scared to go to the ballot boxes, or there may be lockdowns, or there may be whatever. But instantly, the Democrats started having one hearing after another. And really, that started a series. It literally was one hearing after another, after another, after another on election reform laws. And then they added to that, I might add, Georgia. They started claiming, in addition to COVID coming, they said their voter suppression happening all over the country, and they utilized Georgia as Exhibit A, if you will. And of course, I knew better than that, being from Georgia. But yeah, I just had an eerie feeling about all that. Whether or not it was all coordinated, was there some sort of conspiracy? I don't know. I can tell you, I felt as though something is up. It was like they had some sort of crystal ball that they were looking into, and they could see where this COVID was going to take us as it relates to election issues. And so they started just pushing this thing and pushing all sorts of reforms, much of which ended up being adopted all across the country, frequently by unilateral decisions, be it from secretaries of states or governors or whomever. But there would be a unilateral decision made in a state to mail ballots to everyone in the voter registration file or ballot harvesting, whatever, all sorts of things, Sean, that otherwise never would have been allowed to take place. But we start seeing, because of COVID, the Democrats pushing it in Washington, and then almost instantly one state after another adopting the very things that they were pushing. And I was there just thinking, this is unbelievable. And we started pushing back on it. But yeah, it was an eerie feeling that they were aware of something that was coming, or they were taking advantage of a situation. I don't know what it was, but it was very much disturbing to go through.
So, Derek, you guys have been up battling these folks in states. Same kind of question to you. Do you think that this was the master plan by people like Mark Elias on the left, who have been fighting for these watered down voting restrictions, or was this just good timing?
So I think it's a little bit of both, but I think the main thing to think about is the left has had a plan for a long time, predating COVID, about how they wanted to degrade the integrity of elections so that they could, you know, flush as many ballots, regardless of their provenance, regardless of how secure they are, into the system, so that they could try to run up the tally. And so when COVID hit, they were ready. They had these plans already on the shelf, things that they had been exploring and implementing in other states like Washington or Colorado, where they have been voting by mail exclusively for a long time now. What they did is they pulled all those things off the shelf and tried to jam them in to, you know, every state they possibly could, and, you know, including the swing states. And so, you know, they sort of systematically said, well, what have we done in other states where we've lowered, you know, decreased the integrity surrounding the election? And how can we get those implemented in the states that we care about now? And whether that was by legislature, or they did a lot of things in Nevada, for example, or sort of by executive fiat, where they crammed it down in places like Wisconsin or Pennsylvania with dubious legal justification for some of those things, and then turned to courts and said, it's too late to challenge any of this. Plus, it's very dangerous to vote in person, and you have to rubber stamp this. And so it was a little bit of both. I mean, they were ready with these plans that sort of took off the shelf. And then they just executed a strategy during the COVID era. So I think, you know, and they systematically took out things that were protecting the integrity of even mail voting, degrading signature matching, deploying drop boxes willy-nilly throughout the state without any regard to security or distribution, equitable distribution, fair distribution for voters in the state, extending deadlines to receive the ballots, sending the ballots to everybody, even if they didn't request it, on lists that have been subject to dubious maintenance over the years. And so I think the Rahm Emanuel quote is a good one. They had an opportunity to implement their dreams for how an election should be run to maximize their chances for victory. They fear-mongered around COVID, and they got willing election administrators to force it, or governors to force it on people. And then they turned around and told everybody, what's the big deal? This is how we've always run elections. Everything's fine. Trust us. Believe us. And everything will, this is totally secure. And I think that that sort of rapid change was very destabilizing for our country, for our system of self-government, for our democratic institutions. But it was useful for them to gain and seize power.
So, Congressman, Derek's talking about how this got jammed out. I want to ask you about Georgia, because I mean, the point that Derek's bringing up, you write about this, the compromise settlement in Georgia, and how Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger basically implements this deal where they're sending everyone a deal. You have a hearing in Congress. You guys are asking him about this, and he says basically, and I'll paraphrase what you said in the book, he says the quiet part out loud, which is, hey, we cut a deal with her because, you know, she was going to sue us. Her being Stacey Abrams.
Yeah, I mean, it was you basically just summarized it. After the elections fell through in Georgia and all the, of course, we know all that the phone call with the president, all this sort of stuff. Secretary Raffensperger, Secretary of State in Georgia, he made his belief that it was the most secure election in history in Georgia. And the rest of us are looking at him with our jaws dropping and saying, what in the world are you talking about? This was a total disaster. And of course, one thing led to another. So at that time, I was the head of the Government Oversight Committee for the Republicans. And so we called a hearing. I never anticipated that he would come, that he would participate, but he did. He agreed to show up for a virtual hearing. So it was online, but he showed up and I asked him that question. How in the world do you claim this was the most secure election? And we went through a series of things and specifically the deal that was made with Stacey Abrams and so forth. And I asked him, why did you make such a deal? And he said, as you just referenced, well, we thought she was going to sue us. There was going to be lawsuits. And so cave. I sat there stunned, Sean, that our elected officials would throw in the towel of election security for fear of a lawsuit. That just blew me away. But that was what he told us.
But the thing that was funny is you point out in the book that, like, they get sued all the time. Suddenly, this lawsuit from Stacey Abrams rose to a level that, I don't think you even know the answer to this, so I'm not, but it's like, why did he suddenly take the threat from Stacey Abrams greater than the threats from getting sued by a million other people?
Yeah, I can't answer that. It is, you know, she had a powerful law firm behind her, the same law firm that represented Hillary Clinton. There was a lot of talk. And with that, I'm sure a lot of pressure, be it regarding so-called voter suppression in Georgia, along with the COVID circumstance that was rising at that point. So I think all of it combined, there was so much attention focused on Georgia. There was a lot, no doubt, of political pressure being placed on him. I get it. I understand the pressure, but never is that an excuse to throw in the towel on election integrity over just fear of a lawsuit, a threat of a lawsuit, and to absolutely sacrifice the voice of the people and the will of the people as expressed at the ballot box because you're afraid there might be a lawsuit? That is inexcusable, but in essence, that's what's happened. That's what happened in Georgia, and the country has seen the horrible outcome as a result.
Derek, I want to talk about some of the successes that you guys had or are having specifically in the battleground states, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Arizona, Wisconsin, Nevada, North Carolina. Let's just start with 2020. What were the most egregious things that the left did that they didn't necessarily have the law or the regulation to do?
Sure. So, you know, in Pennsylvania, there's the big issue of undated ballots. The law in Pennsylvania is clear that in order for a mail-in ballot to count, it has to be signed and dated by the voter. They ignored that. They also got rid of their signature matching guidance to authenticate the ballot. The signature matching is still
out. Can I just ask this? This is the thing that I find interesting is the they, right? So it's not the legislature. Yeah. Who's the they that got rid of it?
This would have been the Secretary of State in Pennsylvania. So the Secretary of State said, you know, the signature matching is optional. The Secretary of State said the dating requirement is optional and just told people to count those ballots. The signature issue was litigated up to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, I don't know, it's pretty close to the election. We don't want to disenfranchise people, so just count the ballots. They also, in Pennsylvania, extended the deadline for receiving ballots. Now, those ended up being segregated, and there was never a resolution really as to whether those would count or not. They ended up not needing to be counted because of the margin. But in any event, so those are two things that happened in Pennsylvania. The undated ballots issue is one that we finally just got resolved. It's still a little piece of litigation left, but for the most part, it's pretty resolved. But it took 4 years to get everybody to the courts on board to say, yeah, in Pennsylvania, the law that says the ballot has to be dated is the law in Pennsylvania, and it has to be enforced. Federal law doesn't prevent its enforcement.
How many ballots in Pennsylvania? That's been a very close state, 19 electoral votes at stake. How many ballots are we talking about that fell under this category?
Thousands, tens of thousands, probably. Yeah, it's quite a large number. They also allowed for the ballots to be cured in Pennsylvania, even though state law doesn't. The Supreme Court in Pennsylvania in 2020 said state law doesn't allow for curing.
Meaning what? So, what is curing?
So curing is if you submit a defective ballot, it's not signed, it's not dated, it doesn't have a secrecy envelope, it has it's damaged in some other way. They will call you up, and the election administrators will call, or the party a Democratic Party or Republican Party, if they're given the opportunity, will try to contact the voter and say, come in and fix the error on this ballot. There's a lot of nuances to that and a lot of policy questions as to how you allow this curing to be done. Who, is the person, the entity in charge of contacting voters? How long after the election do they have the opportunity to cure? And the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said there's no curing provision in Pennsylvania law. But what happened? Counties just went out and did it. Some counties allowed curing and some counties didn't allow curing. It happened to be the Democratic counties that allowed curing. So those defective mail ballots that came in, they were contacting people over and over again, come in, fix your ballot, come in and fix your ballot. Meanwhile, in other counties in Pennsylvania, if you submitted a defective ballot, that was the end of your participation in the election. So those are just a few examples of what was going on in Pennsylvania. Some of those we've addressed. In 2022, Philadelphia said, you know, we have this provision, these protections to prevent people from voting by mail and then voting again in person to prevent double voting through a process called poll book reconciliation. The election administrators in Philadelphia said, takes too long. We're not going to do it in 2022. So we went and we sued them and, forced them to say, okay, we'll put that procedure back in place. You know, in 2020, that procedure caught dozens of duplicate votes. And you replicate that across the state. You're getting into the thousands of votes in close elections.
Yeah.
President, but also on down to city council. Like these elections really, really matter. And a lot of them are decided by razor thin margins.
Well, I keep telling you, last time we had what, three states, 44,000 votes. I mean, who knows if this time Florida in 2000 was what, 356. We don't know when the next close election is coming. And so if you allow this, right, I mean, that's the problem.
Well, Sean, it's coming. The next close election is the next election.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, right.
Not just for president, but like I said, down to mayor, in New Hampshire elections are decided by coin flips, which is, if there's a tie, you have to have some procedure, but you'd hope there wasn't a tie. And
tie.
If you're running the election properly, you count the votes that are legitimate and you don't count the votes that aren't.
If at the end of the day you have aching feet, I know what you're going through. You're on your feet all day long. The folks at Gravity Defier Shoes have created the perfect solution. They've used a combination of technology and orthotics to put together the perfect shoe for you. So at the end of the day, those aching feet are no more. So every pair of gravity-defying shoes comes with orthotics. And if you've had foot problems, you know how important orthotics are to your footwear. Plus, they use Verso technology in every pair. That's the same kind of shock-absorbing technology that's in a trampoline. So that takes that shock out of the heel. The shoes also help with your posture, meaning that you're taking a lot of the weight off of those key muscle groups. And at the end of the day, you feel a lot better than you probably do right now. The key, if you're looking to find this solution, is to go to GDEFY.com and you can enter code SPICER30. That's going to get you $30 off any order of $150 or more. Trust me when I say that at the end of the day, if you've had feet problems, if you feel achy and tired, gravity defier shoes are the solution. So use code SPICER30 and go to GDEFY.com and save $30 off any order of $150 or more. Congressman Heiss, compare Georgia 2020 to what will happen in 2024. Has it changed the policy of like sending out ballots to everybody or any of these other issues that Derek was addressing that happened in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, there's been some good changes. You know, that whole issue, the mail-in ballots with virtually no voter identification or signature verification, that type of thing has been cleared up. The drop-off boxes, which were an enormous problem in Georgia, that issue, I wish they would do away with it altogether. I mean, there were still things involved in all of this that I wish were different still, but they've made some significant changes. The drop-off boxes are going to be inside precincts, only open during the hours that the precinct itself is open, so it will not be available for people to drop off ballots by the dozens as we took place, as even was verified with video footage, with films like the 2000 Mules and so forth, where you're watching these people go from drop-off box to drop-off box all night long, many of them from midnight to 5 a.m., just taking stacks of ballots. We have more video cameras. So I think a lot of that kind of stuff is going to be eliminated. So there's been some very positive steps in Georgia. I feel like we're certainly moving in the right direction. And for that, I feel a lot better. You know, we've got to reestablish confidence in the voters that we're going to have one legal ballot cast and one legal ballot counted. And I think a lot of that all across the country was removed. And if ever we lose the confidence of the voters that their vote is going to matter, then of course that has impact on elections across the board. As does, for that matter, every time an illegal ballot is cast, it disenfranchises and takes away a vote of a legal vote that was cast. And so, you know, depending on where you live, there's been some positive movement. Unfortunately, there's still a number of states, many blue states, that have embraced what came about through COVID. And, you know, that's unfortunate. But I do think there's a movement across this country. This is an issue that people are deeply concerned about, as indicated from poll after poll. And I think the voice of the people at the end of the day, even in blue states, is going to be heard, and there's going to be a movement even in those states to help protect the election integrity process.
Derek, I mentioned, you know, the other battleground states. We just talked about Pennsylvania. Congressman Heiss, obviously from Georgia, mentioning that. Where else have you guys had success?
Sure. So, you know, in Wisconsin, we had a great deal of success. You know, one thing that happened in 2020 was county clerks were filling in witness certifications for people that came in incomplete, which obviously undermines the entire purpose of having a witness certification. So we went in and sued and said the witness has to fill that out, not the clerk. So we won a victory there. The Wisconsin Election Commission was allowing people to cast their vote, and then however many days later would say, you know what, I want to change my mind. I'd like to change some votes on my ballot, fish the ballot effectively out of the ballot box, and then change their votes and submit that. And then if they change their mind a few days later, do the whole process all over again. And we secured a victory in that case, basically said, once a ballot is cast, that's a cast ballot. I mean, you can imagine
I didn't even know that you could do that. I mean, how do you know which one is yours? You go in and go, that one's mine. I mean, how is that even possible? It's the
the outside of the envelope has, you know, your identifying information on it. So it hasn't been separated from that yet, but in any event, you know, you'd still have to make sure that ballot was properly spoiled and properly handled. And the new ballot was properly handled. And, you know, you can imagine, and it just creates, you know, incentives to sort of constantly run the election. And, you know, this is not the way that people understand elections to be. And at the end of the day, it's really about confidence in elections. I mean, the congressman mentioned this, but I think you can take it a step further, which is if people lose trust and faith in their elections, that's really the end of self-government, because those people tend to stay home. They think the whole thing is a rigged game and that their voice is not heard. And at the end of the day, elections are supposed to be about people rising their voice up and saying, this is the direction I want my city to go. This is the direction I want my state to go. This is the direction I want my country to go. And if they don't believe that that's what's happening in an election, if they believe that it's really just the activists who can harvest enough ballots, who can pull enough ballots out of people from wherever they come from with whatever provenance, then people will start to stay home and we won't believe that we are living in the greatest experiment of self-government the world's ever seen. And that's a real shame. I mean, it's more than a real shame. It's sort of the end of, it's the beginning of the end, I think.
Well, I think Congressman Heiss, we lost two Georgia seats. I at least in my mind, the Purdue seat and the Loeffler seat, we lost because enough people in Georgia didn't have confidence in the system. That's what Derek was just describing. Do you think that that's true, my assessment? And if so, do you think that enough people have believe enough progress has been made that won't be a problem next, you know, this coming November?
Well, the first question, yeah, I do think that is true, that the lack of confidence played a big role. I don't know how much shenanigans also added to what was taking place. I mean, we still had the drop-off boxes and all the problems that were there. So I think you have a combination, kind of the perfect storm there that impacted the Senate race. But I do also think that there have been enough changes. This has been a major issue of discussion in Georgia ever since 2020. And there have been, this has not been something that has been discussed nor addressed in private. This has been an open debate, involvement from the people all across the state. And as a result, the legislature has made some good positive steps in the right direction. As a result, many of those groups that have been involved in pushing for some of this legislative changes have been good in messaging it and getting it out across the state. So I'm going into this election cycle here in Georgia feeling better. Not all the gaps have been closed, I suppose, but many of them, that the big ones, the ones that were major concerns, I think have been addressed. And I think we're going to be going into this election cycle in better shape than we did. And in addition to the legislative changes, and this also is taking place in many other places besides Georgia as well, but the push for poll workers and poll watchers and that type of thing has also been a major emphasis here in Georgia. So we're going to have tons of boots on the grounds, tons of eyes that are present. And of course, the more people are there observing, watching, being involved in the process, the less likely it is for there to be shenanigans, if we can put it that way, taking place without someone blowing a whistle on it. So I'm going into this feeling better and feeling like the voters in Georgia have greater confidence going into this election.
Yeah, I just want to underscore what you just said. I think it's so important. If you're interested or concerned about the election, get involved. Volunteer to be a poll watcher. Get inside there and then use that TSA saying, if you see something, say something. But the anecdotal stuff just doesn't work. You can't, this is a legal matter. And if you say, I heard a rumor, that doesn't count. You need to have someone in that voting precinct that can document something that can be followed up on by law enforcement. And anecdotes just don't cut it. Derek, you know, I mentioned Mark Elias, this super lawyer on the left that's out there doing stuff. What is next for them, right? You guys are countering them in a lot of these states. You're suing, you're keeping them honest. What is sort of the next frontier of the fight that the left is trying? Is it voter ID? Is it more drop boxes? Is it lack of signature verification? Where are they going now?
Sure. Yeah. So what you call him super lawyer, and you know, a lot, he gets that reputation. You know, he did have some success in 2020. He continues to have some success, but it's not, you know, and I want to pick up on something Jody said earlier. You know, election litigation is hard, and it's one of the reasons why, you know, in states like Georgia, they may have, you know, not taken Stacey Abrams head on. I think what we're trying to do now is add resources to that fight to stiffen the spine of some of these administrators, so they're able to take on, you know, these perceived juggernauts and win. And we are winning. You know, in Ohio, they passed a voter ID law, much needed voter ID law in Ohio. Mark Elias sued to try and eliminate it. And he was, with our help, we went in with the state of Ohio, and he was roundly defeated, a complete and total knockout in front of a Democrat judge who said, there is no evidence that this law suppresses even a single vote in the state of Ohio. This case is dismissed. And the defeat was so bad, he did not even try to appeal that decision. He just took it. So these cases are winnable. They can be won. Election integrity is protected by law. And I think, you know, we should have confidence in this. This, we're safeguarding the crown jewel of our republic.
Right.
Like I said, if people lose confidence, it's terrible. And you want to make sure, it's like an airplane. You know, airplanes don't crash very often, but we take enormous precautions to make sure that doesn't happen, because it is so critical both to the safety of the people on the plane and to the economy overall, and just people's general overall sense of health and well-being, that we take enormous precautions to make sure that plane doesn't crash. We should do the same thing with our elections, and the law does protect that. So I wanted to say that one. On where they're going, you know, they are now finding, unfortunately, more fertile ground in state courts. They're encouraging state courts to adopt radical interpretations of election law, to disempower legislatures, and to say that any time a legislature takes any action to safeguard the integrity of the election, it's almost presumed to be a suppression initiative. Mm. And this is a very serious assault on election integrity. It's one we're fighting to point out to courts that you cannot apply this type of rule to evaluating election safeguards without completely handing over administration of elections to the courts and to radical left lawyers who are intent on subverting the integrity of elections. So that's what that's what they're doing. They're going into red states with blue courts, and really pushing this agenda. So they're trying to take out the safeguards. So they're trying to take out signature matching. Just saying, no, we don't. Signature matching is a violation of people's right to vote because it discriminates right against people who are elderly or you know, who can't replicate their signature easily. Which, by the way, there are safeguards to protect that as well. So
of course,
you know, these arguments are not valid. But they're going into that. They're going into states that say, you know, we don't like ballot harvesting because we don't know what's happening in that interchange between the voter and the paid ballot harvester, who is, by the way, paid by probably, you know, left-leaning nonprofits or the Democratic Party itself to give them possession of the ballots. We want to put restrictions on that. They're attacking that. And they're doing this in state court because federal courts, for the most part, have gotten wise to this game and said, no, we're not going to let you dismantle the integrity of the election using federal tools that were designed to legitimate federal tools that were designed to protect true efforts to disenfranchise, real Jim Crow 1.0, right? Like Biden right says, it's a Jim Crow 2.0. It's not. They're not going to let
it's Jim called, Crow it's 1.0 Jim Eagle
rule used. Yeah, for Jim Eagle, and that's right. And so they've moved their game into state courts, places like Kansas, places like Montana. And so we're, you know, that's a places like Wisconsin where they flipped the state court. So I would encourage people, you know, state Supreme Court races, governor's elections to appoint the state Supreme Court. These are really, if you want to protect the elections, you have to also go a couple layers deeper think about your Secretary of State, think about your governor in this regard, and think about your state Supreme Court elections.
Yeah, it's interesting. You brought up the voter suppression. There's a really interesting anecdote in Congressman Heiss's book about an instance at a local community center where they basically created this scenario and then and tried to get people to vote and then called it, you know, had their cameras ready and were calling it voter suppression. And I would just urge people to remember that when the left is setting this up to be voter suppression. And Congressman, you also talk about H.R. 1, the Democrats voting for all thing. I want to just ask you overall, though, do you believe that, as I do, that this is a bigger plan? The Democrats aren't, you know, push this under the guise of helping more people vote. But what it really is trying to make sure that they can control the vote.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely what all this is. That's why we're watching the movement to intimidate and silence people who blow the whistle. We're seeing lawyers being attempted to be disbarred and so forth, or even defending people who believe in election integrity. And we see, you know, the intimidation, all of it has to do with trying to control the vote and the outcome and to intimidate anyone from stepping up. Look, we all know Democrats have challenged elections for the last couple of decades. Every time a Republican has won, that's never been a problem. But after COVID, when there are legitimate problems, legitimate concerns, in your face issues, and Republicans come up and say, wait a minute, this is not right, all of a sudden we're election deniers, we're threats to democracy, on and on and on. And so the intimidation is a part of it, as well as the push to change laws and tip the scales in their favors. And this is where we, the people, the consent of the governed, have to step up at such a time as this and make sure that our elected officials secure our elections. This is, as you mentioned, the epicenter of our entire republic.
Derek, in about 30 seconds, tell me how concerned I should be about people coming into this country illegally, obtaining a driver's license in one of these sanctuary states that hands out driver's licenses, and figuring out how to register to vote.
Yeah, I think it's something that we need to be laser focused on. It's pretty easy to register to vote in this country. You don't need to put a driver's license number. You don't need to put a social security number. All you really need to do is certify that you're a citizen. And there are millions and millions of people in this country, both illegal and lawfully present, who are not citizens. And I think that the message that's being delivered to them is that voting is critically important. You may not be allowed to do it, but voting is how you protect yourself. It's how you protect yourself from being deported. It's how you protect your family from all the evils that Republicans want to do. So there's this message, I think, that's driving, encouraging people to vote. And we do see it happening. And I think we'll see it happening more and more, especially as the left tries to actually legalize non-citizen voting in places across the country, in Vermont, in D.C., which when a lawsuit against that was dismissed, Mark Elias called that a tremendous victory for voting rights. And the question you have to ask is, whose voting rights? Because it's certainly not a victory for the voting rights of anybody that actually lives in, you know, is a citizen of this country, who is a resident of D.C., who's having their vote effectively taken from them by people who are not lawfully present in this country. Yeah. So I do think it's something that we really need to focus on. I'm sorry it took more than 30 seconds, but it's
but I think that's an important message, which is Democrats like to say, but it's illegal. But then the message to illegals here is, if you don't, like, by the way, voting's very important, and the other side wants to deport you. So if you want to do that, then keep us in power. So how do you do that? You vote for us. So I think it's a wink and a nod. It's like, the don't come into this country, but if you do, we're going to give you a free hotel, a gift card, and a phone, and a guaranteed job, and all this other stuff, but don't come, wink, nod. And it's the same thing with voting. It's illegal, but by the way, it's very important to protect yourself from the bad people that will deport you. We'll keep you here in this country, but don't vote, wink, nod. Anyway... Go ahead.
At a recent congressional hearing, you couldn't get one liberal witness to say anything remotely approximating, don't vote if you are an illegal,
because they get it. I get it. They play the game. They're playing chess. We're playing checkers. Gentlemen, good to see you. Congressman Heiss' new book, Sacred Trust, is out on Amazon. To find more information about Derek's organization, Restoring integrity and trust in elections. We've got the website for both in the show notes if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble. So thank you both for being here. I appreciate your insights into this very important matter. Tomorrow, by the way, Senator Tommy Tuberville is going to be here. On Friday, Laura Trump will be here. So a huge, packed-full week. That's why you've always got to remember to hit that notification button and subscribe on YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, and Apple. We'll be back here tomorrow on the Sean Spicer Show.